can't declare this meeting in order. We don't have a quorum yet, but we'll start out declare quorum and do the minutes when the quorum appears. This is the Legacy Funding Division, and we have with us today the esteemed and honorable chair of the Tax Committee, Representative Davids, who wishes to present a bill to us. And where does this, let's see, House File 1762, I will move it for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members, and I am very happy today to have with me regarding House File 1762, Mr. O.J. Doyle of the Minnesota Ambulance Association, and Mr. Tom Hosier with the Minnesota Veterans and Emergency Services Museum. What we're looking at here, Mr. Chairman, is locating in the city of Rochester a museum for the entire state of Minnesota with an emphasis on a museum for veterans, our emergency services, whether it be police, fire, ambulance. So with that, I would like to turn it over to Mr. O.J. Doyle of Minnesota Ambulance Association, and I'm very happy to have with me today Mr. Tom Hosier of the Veterans Emergency Services Museum project in Rochester, Minnesota.
Thank you, Representative Davids and Mr. Doyle.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is O.J. Doyle. I'm a retired paramedic. I'm also the lobbyist for the Minnesota Ambulance Association. I'd like to thank the chairman for his introducing this bill, and just to say that the entire emergency medical services community is proud to be associated with the veterans on this project. We think that this will be not only an educational tool for the public to better understand the emergency medical services delivery system, but we think it will also create interest in our youth to pursue this.
Mr. Doyle, would you make sure you're talking into the mic?
Oh, I'm sorry. So I was saying we believe that the museum like this, in addition to being educational, would also serve as to help plant the seed of interest in our young people in pursuing a career in emergency medical services. A number of federal studies on employee shortages have been done over the past couple of years, and in the top five in some of these studies are paramedics, full-time paid ambulance personnel, and as those of you from rural districts know, it's always a struggle to get volunteers with our smaller rural volunteer services. I won't go any further than that, just to say that I'd be happy to answer questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Doyle. And we do now have a quorum, so I will officially call this meeting to order. And while we're at it, we may as well approve the minutes of February 22nd. Representative Wagenius, would you care to move the minutes? Make it difficult for me today.
If I can, I will.
Representative Keel.
Mr. Chair, I will move the minutes.
Those in favor say aye.
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 I have to pause. See, now you threw me off. Mr. Hosier, or next year?
I'm certainly thrilled to have an opportunity to be here for more reasons than one. The roads aren't very good from Rochester to the St. Paul. But aside from that, I'm sure we would all agree that we could probably do more to recognize the efforts of people who have been willing to put their lives on the line for our happiness and our security. We certainly know a lot about the military. We don't think so much about police, fire, and emergency responders. Our research shows that there is no museum in America that combines all of these efforts under one roof, and solely these efforts. There are certainly these efforts under one roof, but they also have other venues or other subjects that they use, but to focus on just this, those people willing to sacrifice their lives. We think this is unique. We think it's unique in Rochester because Rochester has already gained a reputation for trying to help people that have problems, and we have then the interest in not only building it there, but we think there's an aspect of sustainability which is important in any museum or in any effort, and that is we have about 2.7 million visitors a year in Rochester, and it's been projected by the president of our Chamber of Commerce that in the next 10 years we could have 10 million visitors. So I think it's a great opportunity to learn the history. We find that students today don't seem to know as much about the history of our country as in the past. I'll give you an example. I teach at Rochester Community and Technical College. I talked about the analogy between 9/11 and Pearl Harbor, and I asked my classes, two of the classes, one a class of 15, how many know about Pearl Harbor? None of the 15. The second class, 25, 10 of the 15, or 10 of the 25 knew about Pearl Harbor exactly as we would all know it to be. Five knew something and 10 knew nothing. It seems like we need to complement what's being done or not being done in the schools. A museum like this would be a great opportunity for everybody in the state of Minnesota.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Davids.
At some point, if someone could move an oral amendment on line 1.7 to change the year 2012 to 2013, as I believe this fund is somewhat depleted at this point, and we'd need to be looking at 2013.
Would someone care to make that motion?
Mr. Chair, I would.
Representative Murphy makes that motion. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Murphy. So we'd stand for any questions. I know you've got a lot of folks on the agenda today, so we'll stand for questions. And
members, Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. Just I feel like I'm in the wrong committee, Mr. Chairman, Representative Davids. I've been on the bonding committee, and this is what I would expect to see on the bonding committee.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wagenius, we've had the bill heard. It's going through the process through the bonding committee also. And it's had a stop, I think, in state government finance, and it's been, I believe, they will make recommendations shortly, and hopefully it makes the cut there. So we're just hitting all angles.
Mm. Representative Wagenius, it's kind of like we're the court of last resort.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative
Davids. I'm a student of those that have a great understanding of the legislative process. I have taken my cue from Representative Hahn.
Thank you. Other questions? Representative Murphy?
Mr. Chair, Representative Davids, when I heard this bill in another committee, we were talking about sites. Could you tell us about the progress of where the site of this museum might be?
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Murphy. If I could turn that question over to Mr. Hosier, he is much more familiar with that issue, if I could, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Chair Davids, and Mr. Hosier. And let me just commend Mr. Hosier for his dedication to this and to other historical pursuits. He also has been involved with the Woodlake Battlefield Preservation Society, trying to preserve this Dakota War battlefield of 1862. Mr. Hosier.
I appreciate that acknowledgement, Representative Erdahl. Probably everybody here knows, but perhaps they don't, but the Woodlake Battle was the last battle of the, what I prefer to say, the Minnesota Indian War of 1862. And not many people have visited the site, and not many people know about the history that was there. They certainly know about some of the history afterwards, meaning of what happened in Mankato the day after Christmas. But we're here today to talk about the Veterans Military and Emergency Services Museum, and the question was about the site. The president of the city council, Dennis Hansen, elected or put together an independent committee to select a site, and that site has been selected. I have an awfully strong idea of where that is, and the Minnesota Veterans and Emergency Services Museum Committee is in favor of this site, but it has not been made public.
Mr. Chairman, to that point, and to Representative
Davis,
a very good question. The second that is made public, I will immediately bring it to Representative Murphy and committee members and you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not sure when that will be made public.
I would hope that, well, we're talking about pretty much the end of February, so we would certainly see it, I think, in the next 2 weeks.
Okay, and Mr. Chairman, Representative Davis. You as soon as we know.
Thank you. Representative Murphy?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Davis, I'd be honored to know the site, but the reason for my question, Mr. Chairman, is more: is this land that is available for a price, or is this land that's going to be turned over to the museum? And is it part of the park? I got the impression that the other time I heard it that this could, what might be part of a park.
Representative Davis.
If this is legacy, you know, maybe.
Representative Murphy.
And Mr. Chairman, Mr. Murphy, that's a very important question.
It comes
question.
From two funds, maybe.
Correct.
Representative Davis.
If it's where I think it might be, which I do not know for sure, that would be part of Veterans Memorial Park, but I'm a little premature here because I'm not sure if that's what they picked.
And it's not made public.
Representative Murphy.
Yeah.
That you can bet that is certainly the...
Mr. Holger.
I'm sorry. You can bet. I get excited here. You can bet.
That's because you were a football coach.
42 years. You can bet that is the site. The Soldiers Field Memorial Park has been most recommended to us as the hope that that will be the permanent site. And it's owned by the city.
Further questions?
I'm not a gambling person, Mr. Chair.
Representative Murphy.
Not ask any more questions about the site.
Thank you. Any other questions? If not, House File. House File 1762 will be laid over for possible inclusion in our bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
Thank you. Representative Pepin?
Representative Chair Erdahl, I'd like to move that House File 1062 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Education Finance.
Representative Pepin, I think it was 2433.
Excuse me, 2433. Be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Education Finance.
There might be a problem with that. I don't know if we want it to go to 1062 right or to Education Finance. I may need to study this proposal for a while.
Well, all right. I'll modify my motion and just move that we lay it over for possible inclusion.
Possible inclusion, yes. Representative Garofalo, to your bill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the hearing on the bill, and, of course, I will defer to your expertise and respect in wanting to have this bill laid over for possible inclusion in a later bill. Mr. Chairman and members, what House File 2433 does is it says that at least 40% of the annual spending from the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund must be spent on programs that directly benefit children enrolled in public and non-public schools. The current general fund budget for the state of Minnesota, approximately 40% of that budget goes to education finance, and it seems good policy and the right thing to do to make sure that items such as arts programming and music funding in our schools receive that same level of priority that they currently receive in the general fund. So, Mr. Chairman, I would ask for your and the committee's consideration and support of this bill as it moves through the legislative process.
Thank you, Representative Garofalo. Are there any questions on this? Representative Wagenius. Your microphone, please.
On line 1.22, you say children. Does that mean, I assume that 18 is your high age, does that mean 2-year-olds, 3-year-olds, 4-year-olds too?
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wagenius, I'd be willing to work on that language if you felt that we needed to have us use the term students enrolled in public schools. I'd be open to that amendment.
Representative Guineas.
But students enrolled in public schools, I'm talking about preschools, so I am not understanding whether you, just for the record, is this preschools or just K-12?
Representative Garofalo?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Wagenius, I would certainly not be opposed to these dollars being used in preschool facilities or early childhood facilities. That'd be an option. As the language reads right now, I think it would allow for that opportunity. It would allow for that flexibility. If you want me to seek additional legislative correction to that or clarification to that, we could identify what types of schools.
Representative Wagenius.
Just on another question, Mr. Chair, I think it would be important for us to understand about the money that's being spent with the 40% of general fund right now. Is that going down in public schools and private schools for these children? Is it going up or is it remaining stable?
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wagenius, the last session, Governor Dayton and the legislature agreed to increase the education funding for the state of Minnesota by in excess of $650 million. So it is increasing.
No. Representative Wagenius.
I'm sorry, I was not clear. I was talking about how much is spent on arts in our schools. I'm not the general. Is the money that's being spent in the aggregate in our schools on arts, as defined here, going up, down, or remaining stable?
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wagenius, historically, we do not report fund balances in the school fund budget by activity level. I could certainly check with the Department of Education, but I don't have that information. But with the purpose of this legislation would be, pursuant to the constitutional language, would be to increase the funding that's going to arts and music programs.
Representative Garofalo, arts and music programs, are they, do you have other expenditures in mind for this besides those?
Well, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I think that that would be something that the education, we did conduct an informational hearing on this in the Education Finance Committee, and the Constitution says it can be used for arts and arts education and arts access. That's the way the amendment reads. So I would think within those parameters, we would have many opportunities to identify what are priorities.
Okay. Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wondered, Representative Garofalo, if you have looked at how arts, the arts legacy money is being spent so far, and considered how much those organizations and individuals as well, but really organizations who are receiving the funding are already serving children. I know whenever I go over to either the Walker or the MIA, they're, you know, bigger museums, but there are always lots of kids around.
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Green, that is one of the things I did, is I went to see how the legacy funds are being expended. Unfortunately, under the current reporting, it's very difficult or allows for a lot of discretion in determining whether funds are truly benefiting children or not. So there's a lot of discretion in identifying that. And the feeling that I have, and I would hope that this committee would support, is that having those services provided by K-12 schools or E-12 schools would afford us the opportunity to make sure those are dollars directly provided to children. But under the current law, for example, when we provide money for Children's Museum, the Walker, there's a lot of discretion in terms of the reporting and the items that are going on.
Could you,
Representative Green?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you comment on the organizations themselves, though, as distinct from the legacy funding, and the degree to which, if you're funding the MIA, you are funding arts education for children because their customers, as it were, are often children?
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Green, I think that my opinion on this is that the kids should come first and that the delivery of services to kids should come first. Certainly there's groups out there that are providing educational services, whether it's the Institute, MIA, or other organizations, but I believe that the dedication of the arts portion of this funding should mimic what it is in the general fund, which is right now 40%, and the delivery of those services through institutions that are exclusively exist to educate children are the best uses and the highest priority for those dollars.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment that I agree with you, you know, impassionedly. Children come first, and I would suggest that we focus more on children in the Education Committee.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it sounds like Representative Green wants to send this bill to my committee, and I would, if you have a motion, Representative Green, I would be willing to voice my support for it.
Is that your intent, Representative Green?
I don't think so.
Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Garofalo, do you have any information for us? I know you don't have it by dollar amount because of service type or whatever you said, but any sense of how many kids in the state or what percentage have access to elementary art, middle school, senior high art, band, music, kinds of things that you're purporting to address this funding for?
Representative Garofalo?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Winkler, that is correct. We do not have dollar expenditures at the local level on what has been being spent and what is being spent. We have anecdotal evidence on reporting of course and curriculum offerings, but we do not, that information, to the best of my knowledge, is not reported to the Department of Education.
Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo, I was just wondering if you had any other information aside from funding not being reported to the Department of Education about any statistics or information whatsoever about access for kids to arts and music in the schools.
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Winkler, what I do have access to is that, you know, our budget talks about values, and right now education funding is the top priority of our general fund budget. Close to 40% of our general fund budget goes to the K-12 budget, and it makes sense that the arts and cultural heritage portion of the legacy funds would have those same types of priorities as we have in the general fund.
Representative Winkler.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo, what you can't tell us is whether or not we have that priority, because you don't know whether those programs have been served or not served. So how would this work in practice? Would the legacy committee just appropriate 40% over to the Education Committee, or would we appropriate money to the Department of Education and then you would direct it from there? Or how do we decide how this 40% gets spent, since you know, we don't have the expertise here and you don't seem to have the facts? I'm wondering how we would figure out how to distribute the money.
Perhaps, Representative Winkler, we could figure that out in the time that it's laid over here.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Winkler.
I think this is an opportunity for a public vetting of the question.
And, no, I'll and ask just, the, you know, question.
The author of the bill, I'm sure, has thought this through.
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Winkler, I will once again restate that I am completely open to this bill being referred to the Education Finance Committee and can promise you an immediate hearing on that aspect. I think that something that would be a good idea for your consideration, maybe something you could support, would simply be an additional categorical aid in education finance, universal across the state at the same level, specifically dedicated to music and arts funding across the state, an additional categorical aid. That would be a simple, easy, and direct way to fund the programming of our schools with the guarantee that it has to be used on additional arts and music funding. And I would, and if that was an amendment you would offer, Representative Winkler, certainly I would expect that to be the jurisdiction of the Education Finance Committee, but if you were to offer that amendment today, I would ask the chair to accept that amendment, and I would voice my support in favor of it.
Representative Winkler.
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess Representative Garofalo, before I offered that, I'd want to know if you were going to pay 90% of the money out in the current biennium, or if you were going to hold 40% of that till the second the out biennium before we paid it back. If we'd be making more promises to kids about access to arts and music, and then you know, essentially saying, well, we're going to promise you this money, but of course we're not actually going to give it to you, so we hope that your schools can make up the difference.
Representative Garofalo?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Winkler, you shouldn't be so hard on yourself for voting to increase the education shift in the state of Minnesota from 10% to 30% and to increase the property tax recognition shift to record levels. You shouldn't be so hard on yourself for voting for that.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Winkler.
Garofalo, actually, I should be very hard on myself for doing it, and I am. It was one of the worst mistakes we've ever made. Of course, we did it after trying to raise revenue to pay it back. And it seems to me that what you're doing is trying to take money from arts and cultural heritage to help cover up the fact that this legislature hasn't made has made a commitment to school kids and hasn't delivered on it. But I guess that's, you know, we're debating an education topic here. But my concern is that we're just doing what so many other agencies have done, which is to take general fund reductions, to take expenditure reductions at the legislature and make it up with legacy funds. And, you know, it's I guess it's a way of making the legacy the omnibus committee, so we can discuss every single budget item as we steal money out of the funds that were dedicated for arts and cultural resources and the environment. Every bill that comes here to try to cover up other budget gaps makes this the committee of the whole, frankly. And I think we can, I think this bill should be laid over, and hopefully when it's, as it's lying there, it will pass away peacefully in its sleep.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Winkler, one correction. You did state that when you voted to triple the education shift and to put the property tax recognition shift, you did that after unsuccessfully seeking revenue increases. You are mistaken in your recollection. You actually voted to raise taxes and to triple the education shift simultaneously. And I'm happy to provide the documentation on the proposal. Governor Pawlenty accepted your proposal to triple the education shift to 27% and the property tax recognition shift. I'm happy to have that conversation after committee, but your recollection on that item is flawed and it's mistaken. Regarding the allocation to arts in terms, clearly the Constitution states you could not use these dollars to replace existing funding for arts teachers. You could use it to provide additional salaries for arts teachers, additional benefits for arts teachers, additional instruments for kids, reducing of rental fees for equipment, lowering activity fees. Those would all be appropriate resources. No one is advocating or this bill does not advocate to do that. It's meant to provide additional services for children, and I think that's something that you should be supportive of.
Well, Mr. Chair, just a final comment on the Legacy Committee. Apparently, constitutional language doesn't mean very much because there are a long list of examples in which this committee has in fact gone around the constitutional requirement of supplementing, not supplanting, and this is just another another example of an attempt to disregard the constitutional language, which, given that there's a whole number of constitutional amendments being proposed, I don't know if that means that the words mean something or they don't mean something or if it's just all no big deal, but so far this legislature hasn't shown a lot of willingness to consider seriously constitutional requirements, including a equal system of public education.
Mr. Chairman and
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Winkler, just to be very clear, what this does is, much like with the constitutional amendment on transit funding and the dedication of the motor vehicle sales tax, this sets a 40% floor for our schools. Certainly, this committee could increase and go above and beyond that 40% level. But if it's a priority for this legislature, it has been on a bipartisan basis. I would hope that you would support that level of support.
Representative Dill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I've enjoyed taking this little stroll down memory lane. But let me tell you what is really happening. My wife, a fourth grade teacher in a public school system, tells me that her children in fourth grade get 1 hour of art every 2 weeks and 1 hour of music every 2 weeks in the school district in which she serves. And so we can stroll down memory lane and do all these things and support a bill or not support a bill and argue about who shifted what and who did who to who, but the fact is this is really terrible.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Garofalo.
This bill is terrible or the lack of arts access is terrible?
No, Representative Dill. Chairman, the fact that the legislature can't deliver education to communities in the proper ratios and in adequate amounts. It's a very sad part of my legislative history here, and it's I wish we could improve on it. And the same would go beyond this bill, SHOP. I mean, our mines in the north are clamoring for talented, skilled individuals to do welding and to do work on motors and diesel engines and just any multitude of things. But we have just the same problem with shop glass all over the state, and particularly up where the companies are demanding that people be trained for this. So, Bill, your bill, other bills, the clamoring about all of the constitutionality and all that, the fact is that someday we're going to get a conscience and we're going to fund the education so that it can be delivered out in the community. And I don't mean that as any disrespect to you, Chair Garofalo, or previous chairs before you, Representative Greiling, or others, but it somehow affects change. Thank you.
Representative Garofalo.
Well, thank you. Mr. Chairman and Representative Dell, I appreciate that. And, you know, you should know that your district was one of the chief beneficiaries of the small schools revenue that Governor Dayton and the legislature passed last session to specifically target resources to those small declining enrollment school districts. They don't have the same cost, total cost of ownership and leveraging of savings that large school districts have. So I think hopefully that's something that we can retain in the future and is a positive step, particularly on the Iron Range for those small school districts.
Thank you. Other questions, comments? Representative Murphy?
Mr. Chair, Representative, if we approve 40%, would that money be divided in any way? Would it follow the student? Would there be money for lessons for some talented individuals? Would some of the money go for community education, after-school programs? Who would be responsible for the programming of how the money was spent?
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Murphy, every district is different. And I think the best thing to do would be to appropriate this in a similar fashion that we do the gifted and talented revenue, where we allocate it on a per-pupil basis and we let individual school districts make that decision. And again, I would just ask the members of the committee if that's something that they're inclined to do, I would support that amendment today and would ask the chair. I don't know if you have a 24-hour rule, Mr. Chairman, but I would ask the chair to waive that rule and accept that amendment. That would be something I would support.
Representative Murphy?
Mr. Chair, on that point, Representative, how do we know who's gifted and talented and who belongs in that classification? And because some kids, as Representative Dill said, some kids are not having any introduction, or we just don't know. And
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Garofalo.
Currently, when school districts receive their categorical aids, they have to report back how those dollars are expended within individual funds. And my suggestion would be that we have the same guidance for that we currently do under current law.
Representative Keel.
Chair Garofalo, when I'm thinking about giving that money to the schools, would it be mandatory that it was the education system that would use these funds, or could it be a combined effort along with the Regional Arts Council, you know, as far as instruction or bringing somebody in, things that are done within the classroom?
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Keel, currently school districts do partner with outside organizations in the delivery of services. This bill, I do not envision having any prohibition on allowing that sort of collaboration to take place.
Okay. My concern would be, my concern would be that we would curb that. In my area, quite often when they bring an artist in residence in, they're sharing them with the schools. They'll bring an artist in that will go to more than one community and use them in the schools. I've seen some very unique art projects within our schools. So.
Representative Garofalo?
I have no response.
Other comments? Anyone from the audience? Anyone from the audience? Gentlemen, identify yourselves, please, with tape.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Bill Strasinski, and I represent the Minnesota Association of Public Television Stations. We have a few observations about this legislation. We understand the author's intent. We think there's a lot of wholesome ideas certainly here, but we have some concerns as well. Historically, I've been involved at least in this legislation and now constitutional amendment for 10 years. We've had a number of discussions over that period of time at least about benefiting education and what have you. And we've taken a lot of those challenges seriously, but we're concerned about specific dedication, particular dollar amounts going to one particular kind of funding source, be it education be it biking stadiums, be it restoration of the Capitol. We're concerned about all these things being used to the Arts and Cultural History Fund. So we have some concerns about the specific dedication. I'd like to remind the committee certainly that we are prepared, and we do, and we have two times now, last two bienniums, we come in and compete for the dollars. Nobody's guaranteed continued funding, but we all compete for the resources that are available and make our case every 2 years before this committee. Certainly there'll be opportunities for others to specifically do that, perhaps in the education world. I want to share with the committee, though, we did present a report to you just recently, our legacy report, how we spent the dollars the past 12 months. And I want to point out to the committee, we, public television, we developed 178 lesson plans and guides to be used by teachers in education institutions that they can download for free. It's available to all of these people for free. It's on our website. It's set up specifically with the legacy programs we have done so that they can download and use that material, including the teacher guides, in the classroom. So, and you know, we're the ones that have channels dedicated to children and education as well. So I understand the intent. We're just very concerned about heading down this direction for this, for any kind of purpose, specifically with some dedication. That's my comments, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Straczynski. Mr. Redman.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Larry Redman. I'm here today representing Minnesota Citizens for the Arts. We are an association representing all the 1,400 arts organizations that are in every county in the state, and our membership also includes literally tens of thousands of people that are throughout the whole of the state. We are not the state government entity. We are advocates for their funding in that regard. Arts education, we obviously feel very strongly in favor of arts education. That's a noble purpose, noble goal, and in fact our organization, Associates of the Arts, in prior years has advocated for graduation requirements in the arts area and has been active in that area. We think the state should be significant in that regard. We're also very blessed and very appreciative of the legislature and the people of Minnesota who created the legacy funding for arts activity. Those dollars are significantly beneficial to what happens in every part of our state and every kind of activity. And those dollars are generous, and they're significant additions to what the general fund provides. That being said, they are small in comparison to the total amount of budget dedicated in the K-12 budget. The $30 million a year that goes over to the State Arts Board is K-12, $7 billion a year, roughly? Or
that's $14.5 billion.
For the $14.5 billion. Well, I've understated myself on that regard. We're obviously concerned that there could be a significant dilution of these dollars and their particular purposes if, in fact, it were moved into the K-12 system. Please do not misunderstand us. We think there should be more arts education in the schools. We feel very strongly about that. But through those 1,400 organizations, as one example, we're aggressive. It's not as if those type of groups do not play a significant role in arts education. Just as a few short examples of this, in Grand Rapids, Minnesota, for instance, the Rife Arts Center has a special program that has 7,000 children attending 11 daytime performances, all free of charge, that are extensively working with the schools in that particular program to make sure that there is some kind of additional arts program for the schools there. Additionally, there are 187 kids enrolled in a preschool through 12th grade dance program just in that one community. The Walker Arts Center, looking at a much larger arts institution, of course, in the Twin Cities. There are 500, in an annual year, there are 588,000, over 588,000 total attendances at the Walker Arts Center every year. Of those, 129,000 of them are youth, specifically in education programs that are coming in utilizing the Walker. That does not count the extensive programs that the Walker runs online and otherwise throughout the entire state to augment the school system's educational programs in those areas. Legacy money support both of those kinds of activities. I've got information here about Red Wing. I've got a variety of things. I could go on at great length about this, and I don't think I need to make that point. Of those 1,400 organizations, most of them I could make a similar kind of case that would show kind of overwhelming numbers. But one of our other concerns that is significant to this, in terms of this purpose, as we try to figure out how to have more aggressive arts education in our school system, is, in fact, one of the issues that has come up. The constitutional language, as you know, is very specific about about traditional uses of funding, where it's come from, and the issue of supplanting. Early on, as we were developing the constitutional amendment and we looked at this question and wondered what it ought to be. Well, first of all, there was the issue of scale, the K-12 budget versus the rest, and we were concerned about that dilution. But we were also concerned that this could be open the doors to a problem that has been quite systemic for many years throughout the schools, and that is that literally the school system receives money. What they do is they then reduce their traditional sources of funding that was going to arts education and supplants it with dollars there. I think safeguards of that kind are very significant. We're very, very concerned that that would happen. But in any event, the K-12 system has been the traditional source of funding K-12 in the educational system, and the constitutional language is quite specific that the traditional sources need to be considered and, in fact, applied in this. So though we share the concerns that this bill has, believe them to be noble and appropriate, and we would be happy to assist in that, we think these dollars are not the best way to do that. We would offer this, however. We would be eager for this committee or the K-12 committee, we'd be eager to organize any kind of a tour or any kind of more expansive kind of activity to demonstrate the activities that are going on as these 1,400 organizations work with the schools. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The witnesses remind me of a question, Representative Garofalo. Given this level of funding, how much would it be per pupil per year?
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Wagenius, there's currently about 800,000 public school students in the state of Minnesota. So in education finance, we usually appropriate not on the per pupil basis, but on something called the adjusted marginal cost pupil unit, and I do not have that number memorized.
Could staff...
Representative Wagenius.
Could staff help us out with a rough number? Because my question to you, does somebody have a... idea about
Mr. Soderberg, you have that figured out yet?
Rob.
Mr. Chairman, my reading of the bill and looking at the latest forecast, which will of course change tomorrow for the because it would be in fiscal year 14 that it would start, would be about $22 million, a little bit over $22 million in fiscal year 14, and about 23 and 15. And at 800,000, what is that, about $30 per pupil?
Representative Garofalo?
Mr. Chairman, and to staff, again, we in the education world, we allocate based on adjusted marginal cost pupil units. So that would be an approximation, but that sounds like a ballpark figure would be a good idea. But Representative Wagenius, you know, just an idea for you to consider maybe is to take that money and to block grant it out to individual districts instead of just give us the same flat amount to each district across the state of Minnesota to address the concerns that Representative Dill mentioned earlier. That's something that I'm not opposed to. We could do it in that fashion as a single block grant to each individual school district, so it's not subject to the enrollment rises or declines. And if that's something that you support, I'd be willing to consider that as well.
Thank you, Mr. Soderberg. Representative Wagenius.
Representative Garofalo, you're distracting from the fundamental issue here. If it's about approximately $30 per pupil, or roughly, would you support that expenditure from the general fund for children for arts and cultural heritage, an additional amount?
Representative Garofalo?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wagenius, I may want to see that in the confines of what other sort of budgetary adjustments you're proposing.
Representative Wagenius?
Let's try this again. Would you support $30-ish dollars per pupil for arts and cultural heritage going into the schools at $30 per pupil from the general fund?
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wagenius, let me try this again. That would depend upon what other sort of budgetary adjustments you are tying to that proposal.
Representative Wagenius.
Well, I think you may be answering the question. This money is directed for arts and arts only. But if you are saying we're going to use it to backfill the budget, which you just said, and I That's not where we want to go.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Aguinas, I did not
Representative Garofalo.
Representative Aguinas, I did not say that, and I'd like you to correct the record that I did not say that.
Well, I will correct the record.
Representative Aguinas.
To say that's what would happen.
He said, lay on the ground and play dead, don't get caught in the crossfire. That was a good line.
Representative Wiginius.
I think the important thing for us to establish right away is what is a good amount for us to spend per pupil on arts and cultural heritage? That's the first question. It's not, do I have this pot of money I can divvy up? What is the correct amount of money to spend per child? So we're asked, we've got a pot of money in our, so you have a pot of money in your sights and you want a piece of it, but you haven't come here to tell us what a child needs in an education budget to appropriately fund for arts and arts education. That's the first thing we need to know, and we don't know that yet.
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Wiginius, I think it's important to identify that you attributed a remark to me that I didn't say, and I'd appreciate it if you would retract that.
Representative Wiginius.
You're distracting again. Representative Garofalo, the question I have for you is, isn't it the first thing we have to do, and what I was getting at, is to establish what a child should have in arts education in Minnesota per pupil per year. Once we have established that, then we look for sources of dollars. But we haven't established that number. We're just looking at this pot and saying, hey, I'd like some of that. But let's first say, what's good for a child? I don't know the answer to my question, but it seems that you don't have that answer either.
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Wiginius, certainly your colleagues, Representative Dill, Representative Green, Representative Winkler, and Representative Murphy, have been able to have an honest dialogue with me about this issue without attributing statements to me that I haven't made. So that's the first basis of any conversation is honesty. And so if you're unwilling to pull back that comment, then that comment speaks for itself. With regards to the funding, whether it's been under Republican or Democrat control, roughly 40% of our state's general fund budget, as revenues have risen and increased, have been dedicated to K-12 funding. And that seems like a very good benchmark and measurement of our values for this pot of funds. Again, in the amendment, it dedicates the language is specific that arts education is one of the funding sources. And I'm happy to work with you on this, of making it a priority. On a side note, I do find it interesting that there are concerns about people, about specific dedications of funds, when in fact the arts and cultural heritage portion of this is a specific dedicated fund. The very sorts of designations for floors that are being criticized are exactly what the amendment is designed as.
Representative Wiginius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm a huge supporter of arts for kids. My kids had that opportunity. My grandkids have wonderful opportunities. They're not in Minnesota, but they have wonderful opportunities. I don't know what their school system spends per pupil per year, but I think we need to know what is the appropriate level, good for the kid, to spend per year. And that's what I'm trying to get you, who are head of the Education Finance Committee, to tell us. What's the good level to spend?
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the conversation. We can move to the next question.
You don't know.
Any other? Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to follow up a little bit on that thought. Is there a way of that you can think to ensure that this a dedicated percentage of money going to kids for art wouldn't just backfill effective reductions in state aid to education?
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Winkler, currently school districts do report their fund activities and categorical aids to school districts. I believe that could be incorporated as part of that.
Representative Winkler.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo, what I want to understand is how would you propose to do that? If I guess what you're suggesting is that we need to create an arts categorical in order to compare historic arts funding and establish a baseline of historical spending on arts, and then we would know if we layer on legacy funds on top of that whether we're actually adding to it or whether we're supplanting it. So what is your proposal for how we would know if we were supplanting general fund money for arts in schools?
Representative Graflow.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Winkler, the proposal I've laid out, would be an option. That would be one thing to do. Another proposal that would be forward, and again, this would be something that I'm not opposed to, is a simple statement signed by the school board administrator or the school boards identifying that the dollars that they are spending on this are indeed used as a enhancement to the current services that were previously provided or for additional resources. That might be an affirmative statement that could address your concerns. But I'm open to suggestions that you may have.
Well, Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo, that would not be sufficient because we have similar kinds of affirmations and statements from agencies and organizations here all the time to that effect, and often they are simply not true. And so I think without establishing a categorical for arts, it's almost impossible to know that the legislature, because that's the key thing, it's not what's happening at the school district, it's what the legislature is funding. So if we're funding new money for arts in schools, we need to know what the baseline is, and I don't know how we could do that without a categorical. So the question is, could we establish an arts categorical category for funding that would be separate and stand apart so we would know over time what we're doing? And would you support that? And then the follow-up was, if you would, you know, where do you think we should start?
Representative Graflow.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Winkler, maybe a more preferred option would be for districts as part of their summary to the state is to outline what they spent in the previous biennium on that previous budget cycle on that year, and then to outline how the expenditures were in this current year. That would be an option as well.
Representative Winkler.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo, I think that doesn't fit the standard for the legacy amendment, which is that it has to be supplanting traditional sources of funding, but the decision-making point is here at the legislature. So I guess we could ask for historic records on total expenditures on arts, but then we'd have to cement that in somehow. We'd have to require them to continue spending that same level and then add the legacy money on top of that. But at some point or another, the legislature would have to establish a firm requirement for how much money school districts spend on arts. And I guess the question back to you is, would you support that? Should we have a mandate or a categorical funding category for arts that has to be required in order to get legacy funding on top of that?
Representative Graflow.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Winkler, I think you're misreading the language. The fact of the matter is that the funding and the language is derived around service delivery. So in the event of a school district having a teacher who retires, who's at the top end of the salary scale, being replaced by a younger teacher, there would be no constitutional or statutory mandate to provide to spend extra money on those items. What there would be, however, there would be an insistence that to maintain or enhance the service delivery going to those children. That's the way most maintenance of efforts provisions are defined, if you're using that as a baseline.
Well,
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo, you've said that you want to try to work with us to make this work, and the constitutional language says traditional sources of funding. They don't say traditional levels of service delivery. So in order to maintain traditional levels sources of funding, the legislature would have to lock in some requirement that school districts spend a certain amount of money based on historic data on arts, broadly defined, and that then they have to continue to spend that amount of money out of their general fund, state aid payments, and their local property tax levy, and then on top of that, they could qualify for legacy funds. But first you have to lock in the traditional sources of funding. So the question is, in order to pass this bill, would you be willing to lock in school districts at a certain level of funding for arts, and whether that's through a mandate or whether that's through a categorical funding stream of state aid?
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Winkler, I would have to see the legislature the legislation you're designing, but I don't think that'd be something I'd be inclined to support, but I'm willing to continue working with you on it.
Well,
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo, in order for your bill to be constitutional, I think we would have to work that out, and if you're willing, I'd certainly be open to creating a mandate, a state mandate on minimum levels of arts and arts education in school districts.
Representative Ruffalo?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Winkler, in conjunction to this bill, that sounds like a voice of support that we can work on.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Winkler?
Ruffalo, I don't support your bill as it stands.
Oh.
But because of the constitutional concerns. But in order to do what you would like the bill to do, I think we'd have to first establish a statewide requirement for a certain level of arts funding. So if we can start there, then we can come back to your bill.
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman and Representative
Ruffalo,
I'll just restate my the answer I gave you 2 minutes ago.
Representative Pepin?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I might be a little confused because the discussion is about supplanting and supplementing. And then my understanding between the exchange is that there isn't a categorical for arts right now. So if there isn't one right now, how would this bill be in any way supplanting something that doesn't currently exist? That's what I'm not understanding. It sounds like Representative Winkler wants to create something so that then this wouldn't supplant it. So Representative Garofalo, is there or is there not a categorical for arts? I'm missing something here.
Representative Garofalo?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Pepin, there is not. We afford school districts a broad array of discretion in how they provide these services.
Representative Winkler?
Mr. Chair, I can explain to Representative Pepin that school districts receive state aid payments and they receive local property tax levy funds, and they have some discretion, significant discretion, about how they spend that money. So to the extent arts is happening in the school, it's being funded. And the Constitution says traditional sources of funding, that would be local property tax levies and state aid payments. So we would have to establish how much in local property tax money and state aid payments are being used for arts now and historically or traditionally. Once we've established what's traditionally funded, then we could layer on legacy on top of that. So that's the issue. I mean, arts are happening in schools, so it must be funded. It's not an all-voluntary operation, so that's what we're trying to get to.
And Mr. Chairman,
Representative Ruffalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Winkler, the scheme that you are outlining says that there is a constitutional prohibition on providing more efficient uses of government, and I disagree with that.
Well, thank you, Representative Ruffalo. And at this time, I appreciate the spirited and informative discussion that we've had today, and would like to now lay this bill over for possible inclusion in our bill. Thank you, Representative Ruffalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I appreciate the hearing.
Representative Keel.
Chair Erdahl, would you like to introduce your bill?
Yes, Madam Chair. First, I'd like to move that House File 1062 be passed and moved to the General Register.
Okay.
This is the one of the things that's been through the or discussed with the Civil War Task Force created by Governor Dayton, and this marks the sesquicentennial not only of the Civil War, but also of the Dakota Conflict of 1862. And of course, one of the tragic moments of a very tragic war was the execution on December 26, 1862, of 38 Dakota men at Mankato. And one of those was Chaska, and I would like to discuss this incident a little bit today. Weshunk Washka Don P is not one name for Chaska, Chaske another. On August 17th, 1862, at Acton, Minnesota, the first five were killed to start a conflict that lasted 6 weeks in Minnesota. And one could suggests lasted until 1890, the start of the Plains Indian Wars. On August 18th, the attack came on the Lower Sioux Agency and at Redwood Ferry, and word later on in the day of August 18th reached the Upper Sioux Agency, and people began to leave to try to escape a possible attack. George Gleason, one of the agency employees, took Sarah Wakefield and her two children on the trip to Fort Ridgely. Anyway, we'll discuss that later. But at Fort Ridgely, or they were to leave to go to Fort Ridgely, and along the way, Gleason and Sarah Wakefield, who was the wife of the post of the agency doctor, were accosted by Indians led by Hapa and by Chaskay. Hapa killed Gleason and was going to kill Sarah Wakefield when Chaskay intervened. He saved the life of Sarah Wakefield and two children. For 6 weeks, Chaskay shielded the Wakefields from any danger in his camp. And then the war ended, and a 5-man commission was established to bring to trial, and they use the words loosely, over 400 Dakota warriors. They were brought to trial based on interviews by the Reverend Stephen Riggs. 303 were sentenced to die, including Chaskay. The final order to execute these had to come from Abraham Lincoln himself. Lincoln said, "I will not hang men by the hundreds," and he ordered a review of the conviction sentences of the 303. As this process was going on, Sarah Wakefield said, "If it had not been for Chaskay, my bones would now be bleaching on the prairie and my children with Little Crow." Reverend Riggs announced that there was no testimony against Chaska of any kind. And so Abraham Lincoln commuted the death sentences of 265, including Chaskay. But on December 26, 1862, Chaskay and 37 others were hanged at Mankato. Why? Why Chaskay, when President Lincoln had specifically said, "Don't hang him"? Because 4 Indians had similar sounding names and they got the wrong one. The chaplain wrote to Mrs. Wakefield, "Chaska was hung instead of another. I doubt whether I can satisfactorily explain it." And so what we are asking in this resolution is that the Congress of the United States, the President of the United States, pardon the death sentence and execution of Chaska. Now, if I can anticipate a few questions, you know, how can you pardon someone who didn't do something wrong? Well, a pardon corrects a wrong. Why not all 37? Well, these are 150-year-old records. And frankly, maybe some didn't deserve to die, but others did, if you believe in capital punishment. We can't go back and figure this out after 150 years. But only one of the 38 was ordered by President Lincoln to not be executed, and that is Chaskay. After 150 years, we still have open wounds. With the Lincoln Bicentennial commemoration, with other events, I know that these wounds are still there. My conversations with the Dakota people, and what we're trying to do here is to put a little salve in wounds that are still open. With that, I stand for any questions.
Is there any questions of Chairman Erdahl? Representative Winkler?
Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, this is a really technical question, but it urges the President and Congress to pardon Chaska. I thought only, I don't know what Congress's role in a pardon is.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Keel? You know, it's basically the President who has to do the pardoning, yes. If I need to make a minor change with that, I will.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Well, Representative Dill?
Well, if this bill, Madam Chair, is going to the General Register, that probably should be made now because it doesn't have another stop, as I understand it.
Thank you, Representative Dill. Now, I did
Mr.
get
Chair?
A note here, and I'm in asking before of others, and I should have asked directly. Representative McNamara, do you really want to hear this before your committee?
I didn't. For the record, he says
for the
no.
Record, I said no.
Well, then, thank you, Representative Bill. I thought maybe I had to make another
stop,
but we apparently don't. Where was that? Okay. We could, on line 1.16, strike and the Congress of the United States and it read that it urges the President, and the Congress, that it urges the President of the United States to pardon Chaska. Mr. Soderbergh, would that be correct? Or Mr. Sullivan? Just do that then.
Madam Chair.
Representative Winkler.
Representative Erdahl, and I think you might want to delete lines 1.20 and 1.21 as well. Just have a period at the end of line 1.9.
Yes.
Yes, I would.
Delete that as well then. I move
Mr.
to delete
Chair?
That as well.
Okay. So to be clear, do we want to have Mr. Sullivan repeat what we just changed?
Madam Chair and members, the amendment would be on page 1, line 16, delete the words and the Congress. On page 1, line 19, the end of the line, delete the comma and insert a period, then delete lines 20 and 21. Madam Chair.
Representative Winkler.
There's one other 1.2.
Oh, yes. Mr. Sullivan.
Madam Chair and members, on line 1.2, delete the words and Congress.
And thank you, Representative Winkler, for helping to make a good resolution more accurate.
Okay. Any other questions? All those in favor of the amendment change, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Motion carries. Okay. Then we would be passing this.
I'll renew my motion that this House File 1062 pass and be reported to the General Register.
Okay. He removes his motion. And so all in favor of moving 1062 to the General Register, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair Erdahl. Okay. Oh, next we would have House File 2400. I believe Representative Quam is. Okay. Okay, we need a motion to bring House File 2400 to the committee. Can I have that motion?
No. So moved.
Thank you, Representative Pempin. Representative Quam, would you please introduce the bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. A few weeks ago, some members
from the arts community in several different areas of the state came to me with an issue. And the issue was that they felt that the legacy funds weren't going towards their interpretation of the intent, which was it wasn't fostering the growth and diversity of arts across the state of Minnesota, that it wasn't helping new artists and new organizations to come forward and promoting that growth, sort of watering the state for the arts and having a diverse harvest grow from that watering of the grant money. I have since spoken with several people who have given me some information, and there should be some copies in your packet. And the intent of this bill is to start the discussion of how we can improve the dissemination of grants from the Legacy Fund for Arts. Now, I don't hazard to say that this is the perfect or the ultimate solution, but I believe it's a vehicle to start the discussion. In the information that was provided, there's would be some. It's dated October 4, 2011, is MSAB operating grant facts, and it goes over the previous year activity and indicates that when one way of looking at the grantees is by the size. What is their annual budget? So group 1 through 4. And in that group 1, which are the large arts organizations, received 52% of the grant money. And the concern was this might be more highly concentrating the arts funding and therefore might not allow for the fostering of smaller art organizations throughout the state. Since then, this morning I received additional information in regards to the 2012 operating support to the four groups and what was awarded. And in there, 84%. The numbers are $5,979,000 to group 1. Group 2, $386,000. Group 3, $501,000. Group 4, $277,000. So 84% are going to large art organizations. And I think that doesn't promote the fostering and growth of new and diverse art across the state. So that is the reason behind this bill. This bill is simplistic in that it would take the regional organizations and split the money by population to those organizations. I don't think it's, like I said, perfect, but at least it would foster a little bit more diversity and would bring to, some of the rural areas the opportunity for an artist to live in those communities, be able to take that enrichment that they gain from living in that community and express that in art locally, and then by fostering these small organizations and artists, you're bringing a whole new group. You're allowing them to develop so that after the grants are gone, they have the experience, some of the background, and the footing to continue on. And I think when I look at the Legacy Fund, that's what I see. It wasn't to supplant existing or supplement just what we have. It was to foster something new and great, because Minnesota's not monotone in any of its areas. And the great flavor and variety that we have across the state, and if you take a summer and a few weeks and drive around the small towns and the small communities, you'll notice that they do have uniqueness. And I'm just asking that this committee look at trying to improve this system so that we can water those areas, allow them to grow, and bring forth that diverse spirit and richness that I think the state and the different regions need.
Thank you, Representative Quam. Do you have any testifiers?
None that would seek the wrath of the group that disperses the money.
Okay. Just making sure. Do we have questions for Representative Quam? Representative Dill.
Well, I was wondering if the Metro Regional Parks and the Greater Minnesota Parks Group would like to come in and weigh in on this, because they certainly have had their day in court over the percentages and how that's distributed. I know, Representative Quam, you may not be quite as familiar with that, not serving on this, but maybe they're the people that come forward and testify.
Correct. Representative Quam, do you have a comment?
I think I glimpsed part of that with the last year's legacy bill, and so I understand the intent of Representative Dills. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Wiginius.
Thank you, Representative Dill, for bringing that up. Representative Quam, I'm sympathetic, particularly when I look at the heritage funds, and I think the Metro, with what is it, more than half the population, gets 6% of the funds. So I think you brought up a terrific thing for us to discuss.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm sure that the chair is appreciative of me promoting that discussion. But in some of the other materials, it does include all of the some of the different areas of festival support, partners in arts participation, folk and traditional arts, and how that is dispersed out. And at times it favors one area or another, but I do appreciate that looking out for the diversity is something that Representative Wiginius is intrigued by. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Is there any other questions of Representative Quam? I believe we are going to lay this bill over. Pardon? Oh, is there anybody else that would like to testify? Come on down. And would you identify yourself for the record and state who you represent?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Sue Jens. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota State Arts Board, and will be very, very brief. I have to admit I'm caught a little off guard, because I was prepared to talk to the change that was in the bill, which was about the allocations formula for the regional arts councils. So let me say just a very quick word about that, and then I'll address some of the points that Representative Quam was just now making. First of all, an apology from the chair of the Regional Arts Council Forum, who could not be here today because of weather. But I've been asked to say on behalf of our Regional Arts Council friends that the bill with the proposed change would not be something that the Regional Arts Councils themselves would like to see happen. The allocation formula that they have in place right now is something that has been in state statute since 1995. They've told me that it's actually been in practice much longer than that, and it gives them a great deal of autonomy amongst the 11 regions on how those dollars are divided up. So just on behalf of the Regional Arts Councils, the language, the proposed change in the bill, is not something that our colleagues, the Regional Arts Councils, would support. To the bigger issues that Representative Quam just now raised, and I have to admit, the handout that he gave you today I saw as I walked into the room today, so I can't really comment on the numbers or the information that's there. But just to give you a little bit of context, The operating support program that he's referring to is one of 10 grant programs that the Minnesota State Arts Board operates, or offers, pardon me. It's a roughly 40% of all of the funds that we have available. And it's a very specific kind of grant program, and it's designed in a very specific way, which is that organizations of a certain size with a certain level of history and having been established will come to the Arts Board and apply for operating support for us. And smaller organizations that are based in communities throughout the entire state will, that if they're smaller, if they're younger, if they're less, they have less of a track record, will go to their regional arts council. So the program really is designed to have a regional arts council component and an arts board component, and so it's not unusual that there would be a favoring of larger organizations in that grant program versus smaller. And we'd be happy to explain in more detail when the committee has more time how those programs fit together and how not only the one grant program but the other nine are also funding programs in the Twin Cities and in greater Minnesota. So I'll leave it there for the moment and let you know that we'll be happy to come back and give you more detail or answer questions today.
Thank you, Ms. Jens. Could you please identify yourself?
Sure. Madam Chair, Larry Redman, representing Minnesota Citizens for the Arts. We have concerns about the bill as to its makeup. However, again, also like the prior bill, we appreciate Representative Juan's efforts here. He's, I think, trying to make a very good program better, and we want to pay attention to that. In fact, decentralization of arts funding, whether it's by geography or by genre or whatever, is something we're very, very committed to, and we're very proud of having championed that over the years. I should point out that, and Representative Kwan was good enough to meet with me at my request just yesterday afternoon. We had a good chat, but it was short, and I think there's lots of work that we need to do together. Particularly, he's been doing good work in terms of looking at the numbers and so forth, but we're just really kind of getting acquainted. I think I realized this yesterday, I would have mentioned it to you, but when we first saw the introduction, with respect to Representative, I think the language is not exactly what you're trying to get at. The specific language in the bill is specific to the proportional representation of the regional arts councils. And in our short conversation yesterday, good conversation yesterday, and in the testimony today, your comments actually speak of, I think, all of the arts board funding. And the regional arts council represents about a 30% of it. I think most of your requests are actually beyond the regional arts council. And I just, by way of just getting a bill in proper form to be helpful, I think there's some language issues that would need to be worked even to meet the representative's purpose. I should say this, though, that it's very complicated figuring out these proper distribution systems. It's very important to us, Minnesota Citizens for the Arts, that there's money in every part of the state and that there's also money reaching high levels of quality. But most importantly, we're concerned that the public is seeing this. We want, no matter where anybody lives, we want to make sure there's art activity and quality art activity. We're also extremely concerned that there are strong accountability systems. This is public money. We're very, very concerned that there are measurable methods of seeing what has happened. And frankly, we think that that has happened. Representative Kwan mentioned 10 organizations that make up just one arts program, the group one. It's a subset of a subset, actually, of total funding. And I'd like to work more on the numbers and whatnot to look at that. But just so you have a sense of proportion, you know, and I don't want to beat around the bush, there are some very large national arts organizations in Minnesota. That's a blessing we have. And I will have to say that the largest of those are indeed based in the Twin Cities. They're based in the population center. And it is also true that, from a dollar standpoint, the largest single grants that are distributed do go to those organizations. But interest, and that's relevant to the discussion in terms of comparing numbers of those versus much, much smaller groups of the, you know, again, what do we have, 2,600 total grants that have been made over the last many years. However, I must tell you that if you also look at the total grant amounts
that are as a percentage of the group's operating budget. And remember, there are specific requirements that the legislature required and the State Arts Board is required for doing that. It's interesting to look at what those grants are as a percentage of the operating budget. You will find, to that point, that in the Group 1 category, and I'm sorry, Representative Kwan, I wasn't prepared for this yesterday, so we weren't able to talk about this, but roughly the contributions that those 10 largest groups got, we're talking about the Walker, we're talking about the Minnesota Orchestra and so forth, that the state's contribution represents an average of about 3.5% of their total operating budget. Now, I have to tell you, that amounts to great because it wouldn't be replaced. We don't know where else to get it. There isn't money being left on the table anyplace in these charitable activities. But then if you jump down to what we call Group 2, which is this much smaller class of organizations by budget size, that is, but larger in number, you'll find that instead of the state's contribution to those budgets being 3.5, as with figures, the average is 7.3%. So as you get smaller, the contribution actually represents a bigger portion of your total budget. And then when you drop down to Category 3, you'll find that that number goes up to 12.4%. The point being is that as you are smaller, the percentage you're getting from the state is actually bigger. Now, we could rearrange those dollars, but at some point you have to wonder, yeah, is that really productive? Is that accountable in terms of the numbers of people? Hundreds of thousands of people go to every one of those major arts organizations a year. So if you measure it by attendances, the numbers are even more dramatic in terms of diluting those larger groups. These are just what we call Group 1, 2, and 3. Ms. Jens pointed out that there are multiple programs at the State Arts Board, not mentioning the Regional Arts Council system. If you go into the Regional Arts Council system, there are a vast number of organizations of much smaller budgets than the ones I just referred to. And if you look at the comparable percentages of their budgets, I don't happen to have those, you will find that those numbers are even, as a percentage of their budget, are even greater. In fact, in some very sparse populated parts of the state contribution sometimes represents 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, in some cases 70%. Now, we would defend that because, especially in the most remote parts of the state, but for the state support, particularly legacy, there would be no activity whatsoever in that area. So that's important. But nevertheless, in terms of being accountable, you have to measure whether or not, if you were to just redistribute dollars, take it away from the 600,000 people who go to that arts organization, and then take that and put it in that, have you just dropped all kinds of public money into that area that really is going to beyond what could really be effectively and accountably used? Accountability was an extremely high value of this committee through the last few legislative sessions than one we take very seriously in that regard. This is an ongoing process. The legacy issue is going to be before us for a long time. The very thoughts that Representative Kwan has brought here, I think, are valuable. We need to be working on this. This is an ongoing process in perfection. But I think this is one that requires, you know, a bit more work, and we're eager to work with you, of course, and Representative Kwan in that regard. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Redman. Are there any other questions? Any other testifiers at all? Okay. I guess then we will, go ahead, Representative Kwan, excuse me.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to wrap up, and I understand the points. However, 84% going to large doesn't quite seem, you know, what I'd consider, quite balanced and appropriate. And, you know, if we were funding high school football versus professional football, I think you could make the argument that most of the money should go to professional football, but I honestly think, it's better. I like the all of the games across the state, and in their entirety, I think they add quite a bit to the state instead of just putting it into the one big area. So that's, part of the driving. In fact, regionally wasn't part of the, analysis. I would prefer to see smaller artist activities pop up in the metro area too, because we already have strong and vibrant and nationally recognized organizations. It's the new artists coming out, getting established, helping them is part of the driving behind bringing this forward. And I really appreciate the time before the committee. I appreciate the discussion and the questions. And I am wholeheartedly open to pursuing, you know, this and working with the interesting parties on this. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Quam. And then I think we lost Joyce Pepin. Did she move the bill? We move the move it to lay it over, right? I will do that. So, what'd you say?
Nothing.
So with that, I believe we are done. Well, King, this case is closed.